the future. There are no people. There are no people in the future. No people at all. There are no people in the future. Where did all my people go? There are no people in the future. Let me try my people call.
Hey everybody, it's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Yes, it is Out to Coop Live once again. Our wonderful Monday night call-in show here on the Podbean app. I'm very, very excited about this. First, I want to give a shout out to Jonathan Mann. Jonathan Mann was the songwriter who for our feature song tonight. There's no people in the future. Jonathan Mann is the song a day guy. That's right. Holds the Guinness Book of World Records for writing the most numbers of songs in consecutive days. I'm saying that, I'm butchering it, but there it is. But thank you to Jonathan Mann. This week's Out to Coop Live tonight, we're talking to Sam Weymouth of 717 Restaurant Workers United and Danny Martin from Harrisburg DSA. 717 Restaurant Workers United is a labor union dedicated to protecting and representing restaurant workers in the central Pennsylvania area. And they're in the middle of an organizing campaign with restaurant workers at Cork and Fork. And that's a restaurant locations in downtown Harrisburg and Camp Hill. So I came across this this organization effort, and part because they sent me a press release and I was kind of looking at it. It was very, very intriguing because it is clearly a bottom-up, grassroots, kind of worker-oriented campaign that comes from the restaurant workers themselves. So that was really fascinating. And then on top of that, they had an event last week, which was called the Takeout Takeover, right? And basically, they were encouraging supporters of restaurant workers at Cork and Fork, right? And kind of more broadly, but at Cork and Fork in particular, to call in on Monday, last Monday, and order takeout, right? And they're going to order takeout to basically demonstrate to the owners of Cork and Fork restaurants that the community supports workers' rights, supports living wages, and supports the right to organize, right? And it was a success, right? So I get this press release. It comes in. And I just want to kind of read through the press release a little bit to give you a sense of what this campaign was or what this action was last Monday. And as a kind of a little bit of an introduction into what 717 Restaurant Workers United is. All right. So here it is. So 717 Restaurant Workers United organized a takeout takeover on Monday, July 20th, 2020. Guests were encouraged to order takeout from either Cork and Fork location in order to show their support for the unionization of restaurant workers. The event was a resounding success. Due to a social media push with the help of the Harrisburg DSA and a successful Reddit post with nearly 5,000 likes and 600 comments that garnered the support of restaurant workers nationwide. This is freaking awesome. At the Harrisburg location, takeout sales surpassed $1,900. The West Shore location reported a great amount of support as well. Nicole Miller, a Democratic contender for the Pennsylvania State House in the 47th District, was among the many to show up and support the unionization of workers. Tiffany Ramsey and Samuel Weymouth, co-founders of 717 Restaurant Workers United, are overwhelmed with joy and gratitude from all of the support. They're excited about the upcoming election that will be held at both Cork and Fork locations, deciding whether or not the workforce will unionize. They hope Cork and Fork can become an industry standard for the area, inspiring other restaurants in the Harrisburg area to unionize. And if you work at a restaurant in the Harrisburg area or are tired of not having a voice on the job, visit www.717rwu.org/take/action, or not take slash action, take hyphen action, to contact 717 Restaurant Workers United, and they will help you fight to fair representation in your workplace. And you'll be able to kind of click on those links kind of in the show notes at the end of this. And so on today's show, let me just tell you a little bit before I introduce our guests and welcome them into the show. I was absolutely intrigued that you've got this ground-up organizing effort and you've got the help of the Harrisburg DSA. Now, we've talked a lot about DSA chapters across our region, across the country, as the kind of one of the kind of organizing centers on the left in cities and towns across the state of Pennsylvania and across the country, really. We've seen major electoral victories, but we shouldn't be focused only on electoral victories when we've actually got this kind of organization or organizing that's going on. And then you've got, you know, here is a perfect example. You've got this kind of startup union, right, organized by workers for workers, right? And you got the DSA that is there, right, the Harrisburg chapter of DSA there to lend a helping hand, to lend a support, and to kind of like further that organizing effort. So what a better way of kind of having this conversation was to have Sam Weymouth from one of the co-founders of 717 Restaurant Workers United, and then Danny Martin from the Harrisburg DSA to here to kind of walk us through a little bit. So I'm going to welcome them here to the show. Well, let's see. Here we go. Pardon me for my walking through the call-in. Welcome, Sam. Welcome, Danny. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. Excellent. Excellent. So first of all, thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. I know we had, as always is the case on our podcast, as longtime listeners know, is that you always run into these little technological glitches. And our glitch today was like email decided to stop functioning for a while. Like literally, like it took, Mark Zuckerberg's brilliance of Facebook and him, his data mining operation for us to be able to connect and say, hey, did you get my email? No, did you get my email? No. But we made it, we're here. So I'm very happy about that. So let me turn to you first, Sam. I mean, Sam, you're one of the kind of co-founders of 717 Restaurant Workers United. And just can you walk us through a little bit about what 717 Restaurant Workers United and how we got to this place.
So we, Tiffany and I, one day at work decided after like just a bunch of abuse, not only at our current restaurant, but like just throughout our career in restaurants, that pretty much enough was enough. There was like miscommunication about wages that were supposed to be paid to us, and that really infuriated us because it was just like uncalled for, especially in a time that like what we're going through right now, where, you know, like everything's just so unsure right now. You don't need your money messed with.
Right.
So we decided that like it was time like for restaurants to have like restaurant workers to have a voice and to unionize. So we did some research and we figured out what we had to do, and we're doing it. We're forming we are like a nonprofit organization officially, like with the government. We are like a union that can represent other restaurants, and that's basically what we want to go towards. We want to organize Cork and Fork just because, well, first of all, we work there, and it just seemed like the best like starting ground to show other restaurants in the area that not only is unionization like possible, but it can be a good thing for everyone. And that's basically what we're trying to prove by doing this.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, I have to say, I worked in the food industry for years, right? And I've worked in, I've been on unionizing campaigns before. I was an organizer for, say, adjunct faculty when I lived down in D.C. I think you don't have to agree with me on this, but when I hear this was a miscommunication about wages, all I hear is wage theft. Yeah, they were ripping you off. Right? So, and I can tell you, as someone who worked in the food service industry, it's like, and, you know, again, if you've been following any of this stuff about wage theft and whether or not we want to kind of be as direct and harsh about it as that, but this is something that is rampant all throughout the food service industry, right? I mean, not just at Cork and Fork, right? And which is exactly why the workers at different locations need to kind of stand up to be able to expose it, because they're the only ones with kind of the evidence and the proof that this is going on, right? So whether we're talking miscommunication or overt kind of conscious wage theft, this is a problem, right?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
So let me dig into this a little bit more. So you decide that you're going to unionize. Now, what made you decide like, hey, we're going to do this on our own? Right. I mean, what, you know, why weren't you sitting there going like, you know, 1-800 for a union, right? You know, and dialing it up and say, you know, looking in the yellow pages, right? If we pull out the old telephone books and say, hey, we're just going to go with, we're going to find a union. We're going to call them up. We're going to organize. What made you guys decide to do this kind of on your own from the ground up?
Mainly because there really hasn't been, especially in this area. Now, there are examples like throughout America of like little pockets, but like there's no real unions that exist for like small businesses, for small like restaurant workers, or like, and also just in general. Like, you know, you got the Hershey Entertainment Group And then we emailed them and they didn't get back to us. And I think in Detroit, there's a bartenders union. And I think in Atlantic City, there's a restaurant union as well. But they're very few and far between. And we just realized that, like, there's no real, like, foundation here for it at all. And that we needed to create it in order for it to actually happen.
Excellent.
I
think that's great.
I think that's great.
I'm getting some of my feedback here. Okay, that's gone now, I think, hopefully. So, Danny, let me turn to you. So,
sure.
Here you got these folks that are organizing at a local restaurant. How does the DSA get involved with this one?
Sure. DSA has been trying recently to orient itself towards these other projects. We had some success in San Francisco working with dock workers and their unions to help organize the Anchor Steam Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm.
That was a co-project with the local DSA chapter, and other chapters followed suit trying to help start up these projects where their members worked. And then this got kind of put into our national strategy at our convention last summer, where we decided to adopt this national strategy to try and help found new organizing. That's not what happened here, but I'll get into that in a second. But
I just want to stop you for a second, because the Anchor Steam organizing campaign was a fascinating one, because here you have like a rapidly growing kind of industry, say craft brewing, right? And Anchor Steam is kind of like one of the oldest in the country, right? And
yes.
And that really was the first time that, you know, again, there's been cooperative, employee-owned kind of endeavors in the craft brewing industry and that kind of stuff. But to see a unionization campaign, especially at Anchor Steam, right, a kind of a legacy craft brewer, I mean, that was that really kind of, like, I think, opened up the kind of imagination, right, the kind of, like, the political, like, imagination space to be able to do that stuff. So
absolutely.
I just wanted to kind of give you guys kudos on that, because I know DSA was at the ground floor. And it was the kind of stuff that, again, emerged in this kind of like organic kind of worker centric organizing model.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was really incredible, both because it brought together into the same union people who worked in the factory at Anchor Steam and also people who worked in the tap room across the street. So you had people who were servers and then people who were, you know, on the factory line in the same union. It's really cool. And also that a lot of, you know, as you mentioned, craft is booming, but very few, if any, actual unions in craft, whereas a lot of your bigger domestic beers have, you know, very strong unions, with the exception, of course, of Yingling, our hometown darling.
If there's anybody listening that does not know that Yingling is like evil, please know that now.
Complete villains. But yeah, so, you know, in the craft, so the craft boom all just kind of sidestepped the union culture that the bigger domestics had. So it's really cool to see. But yeah, I mean, that kicked off the imagination for us too, which is why this all happened. And so our national body, we have a specific labor body with labor activists and union members from across the country. And they put together this national, restaurant organizing project, as well as an essential workers organizing committee, to help chapters, do this organizing work with essential workers and people in restaurants. And we decided to adopt this locally. And so we sent out, you know, we set a meeting time to talk about the campaign, and we set out an interest email. And that night, someone from 717 Restaurant Workers emailed us and said, "Hey, we're about to do this right now."
Mm-hmm.
And we said, "Oh, great.
Well, look at
great,
this.
We should talk." Yeah, it fell right into our laps. So that was really exciting. So that's how we got involved.
Well, I'm really interested about this because, yeah, like, especially, and I was unfamiliar with the backstory until you just told this, right? So I'm even more fascinated now, because I think that You know, again, I'll continue to kind of plug DSA any chance I get in terms of, you know, the approach to organizing. Well, I just, you know, we haven't seen this. It's like, okay, look, I grew up in kind of like socialist, like, you know, ever since I was in high school and college, anarchist and socialist communities and things like this. And we used to go to the Socialist Scholars Conference in like Manhattan College in New York every year. And DSA back then, right, was, you know, there was like, you know, those old folks who were sitting over there with the roses, right? You know,
and yeah, we're sitting,
you know, it's like, they're those folks that are over there and they're really nice people, right? But
they carried the torch for a long time.
Well, that's exactly.
I got to thank them for it.
That's exactly what I want to say, right? Is because those folks, I have such a different perspective on those, like those folks were there at the table because they were always there. They're always willing to talk to people. And when the times were, you know, really thin when it came to organizing, you know, they were still there. And now, because of that, because of the work that those people pulled in, the thankless work that they put in over like literally a generation or more. Now we see that we've got the fruit of this, you know, the same kind of model that has incredible life right now. And it's really, I think, establishing a pattern for how we do organizing on the ground. So.
Yeah. No, I agree, and thank you.
Yeah, cool. So, all right. So, let me get back to you, Sam. So, tell me a little bit of the story of this campaign. So, it's not as if you're sitting there one day and you're saying like, "Huh, you know, it'd be kind of fun to do. It'd be kind of just kind of fun to organize a union for the sake of it." What got you to that point? I mean, we already talked about the wage theft, or I'm sorry, the misunderstanding about what you're supposed to be getting paid, right? But what's that organizing like, right? Doing it in kind of a shop, talking to your coworkers. There seemed to be already a certain kind of consciousness among folks that are working there. And plus, you're talking about the restaurant industry. You're not just talking about a whole bunch of people that are kind of, you know, like longtime, say, union activists, or say, I mean, you've got folks that are all over the political spectrum. You've got folks that are one of the most diverse industries in the country, right? Large percentages of, say, immigrant labor. I mean, I don't know how much that is true at Cork and Fork, but I know that it's true across the industry, across the country. I mean, and what's that organizing experience been like? And what's that feedback been like as you're talking, having these conversations?
It's basically, as you suggested, all over the spectrum in America in general, and just I feel like it's also exacerbated in the restaurant industry. There's a very negative connotation to unions. Like when you think unions, you think like Jimmy Hoffa and the mob, and like just like this corrupt organization. You think like lazy workers. It's a very and I personally believe a very intentional kind of like demonization of something that's very good for workers. Now, like a lot of people there are very down with it. Like a lot of people, a lot of workers are very like into it. But I have like, you know, talked to a couple workers who, you know, don't necessarily think unions are necessary, or that, that like unions could be unnecessarily harmful to like small businesses, which honestly, if you know anything about Cork and Fork, you know, like it's only a small business in name when you think about the investors and like, like the whole story, like coming up, it's just like I started in the kitchen, like as a dishwasher at like 18, and I just like from there, like when it comes to wage theft, they would like change my hours, they would change the day they're paying me so they can get money in the bank. Which if you're making $8.25 an hour, you need pretty much you're living paycheck to paycheck, you need that money immediately. And like, you know, just like throughout, I've just seen it. And Tiffany too, it was just like the amount of abuse throughout, like just like throughout our entire careers, we decided that it would be better with a union. And that's like, and just like organizing on our own, it's been a very rewarding and very difficult process, because like, you know, you'll have those days where you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. This is amazing. This is fantastic. And other days of like, oh my God, this is going to, I'm just going to get myself blacklisted from the industry very quickly.
Yeah,
but overall, it's been very rewarding.
Yeah, and it's also, I think you find, you know, in food service, and again, the food services or food service restaurant work is not the only place that's like this. But, you know, I mean, I know when I worked in the food service industry, I mostly worked in, say, kind of catering. I worked like at the Carrier Dome at Syracuse University. That's kind of one of the ways I paid my way through college. I worked in catering companies after school. Anytime that I moved someplace, the first thing that I was looking for was, where is it a catering company that I can get a job? Because you know there's always work because there's such high turnover. And I love the work, to be honest with you. I mean, I love the, you know, the hustle. I love the kind of engagement. I love being around food. If you could see me, you could I'd be evidence of that, right? And I loved kind of the engagement with, you know, with the clients or the customers, right? That always felt great. And there always felt like this kind of camaraderie among the folks that are kind of working there, generally. And it's not always the case, but generally. But then when it came to actually what you're getting paid, right, and the kind of conditions that you're dealing with management, it's just like a night and day experience. And I think I was reading Tiffany's story about getting this started, and it resonated so much with my own experience when she was saying that, you know, look, there's been a couple places I could look at. And I could say that was a great place to work. They treated people the right way. They paid you well. I'm like, great. But those are few and far between. And yet we're talking about one of the key industries in this country.
That an industry that in Pennsylvania, I was just talking to someone the other day. It's like it employs like over like 300,000 people throughout the state, and that's just full time people. Like, you think about all the part time people who work in the restaurant industry. Like, most of the people I work with are technically part time. So you're talking about like an industry that employs probably around like 1 million people in the state, if they're like close. Like a giant industry that is just allowed to be used and abused. And I love this industry. This is like coming from like I wouldn't be doing this. Like, if I didn't love this industry, you know what I mean? Like, I'd just like get a different job or in a different industry. I want to stay in this industry for a good long while. So I want to change it for the better. Like this industry gives you so many talents, whether like when it comes to like thinking on your feet and being resourceful, and just like, you just meet everyone from every different walk of life. Like, I've met people that I my outlook on life would not be the same if I didn't work in the restaurant industry. I just feel like it deserves better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, some of the funniest people I ever met were when I was working in food service, right? Was kind of just like, funny, like interesting. And, you know, if you take like 1 second to kind of, you know, get to know those folks, like in between breaks or kind of, you know, when you have a little bit of a slow time, you suddenly, there's like this whole other world about the interesting people that are kind of in the industry. And I agree with you 100% that people deserve more. So let me just say to everybody else who's kind of tuning in and listening, thank you, everybody who's kind of joining us for the live show here. You do have the opportunity to call in. We're going to start taking calls maybe in about 5 minutes or so. So if you do want to call in, you'll see basically at the bottom of your app, you call in through the app on his little phone. You can call in. It'll show up on my screen, and we can take your comments, your questions, anything specifically you want folks to respond to. You want to tell your own story. I mean, are you somebody who's worked in the food industry, and what kind of things have you experienced in there? One thing I wanted to follow up with, this is kind of connecting both what Danny was talking about in terms of say the food service or kind of restaurant industry as kind of a target industry, and what Sam kind of mentioned in kind of briefly about, you know, the concern about the harming of small business. I think that this is where something like Cork and Fork as a target restaurant. Now, I've never been to Cork and Fork, right? I just know it through reputation, right? It's a place that hosts many, say, Democratic Party and Republican Party fundraisers, right? It's a place that has lots of clientele from, say, the political class of Harrisburg, right? You've got the downtown restaurant, and then you've got the thing. It's also has that bit of a reputation because it's, you know, it likes to have kind of local cuisine. It likes to have local ingredients. It's that, you know, kind of has that greeny feel to it, that feel good place of getting that experience of local ingredients and that stuff. But as you all mentioned, this is not, it's not just like, you know, just some, say, random people who decided to have a restaurant. I mean, you've got some major investors here. I mean, you know, I mean, I know, for example, you got a couple of the investors. One of the investors is one of the largest kind of developers in the city of Harrisburg, right? Eric Hartslow. You also got, say, you know, kind of Ray Zaborni, right, is kind of runs his own kind of consulting firm, right? And, you know, you've got these people, David Latore, right? I mean, these are people that are not kind of scraping by from paycheck to paycheck, right? This is part of an investment strategy. And the other reason I'm really interested, and I'm curious kind of what your take is on this, Danny, especially in terms of your the conversations in DSA about this being an industry to target, because in my mind, what we're seeing after COVID-19, right? Because of course, this is all organizing that's happening in COVID-19, right? In the pandemic, in the COVID-19 is basically we see a setup right now where the mom and pop restaurants, right? The small industries, the small, whether it's convenience stores, whether it's corner stores, whether it's restaurants, are really at the risk of kind of just being wiped out, while these major investors are going to come in and scoop all this stuff up. So we could see a further concentration in the industry where, yeah, we might have nice local names that are on the outside of these restaurants, but they're going to be increasingly kind of owned by hedge funds. They're going to be owned by kind of large investors that are not there just to kind of make a living for their family, but as just an investment strategy. So I'm curious how that figured into your discussions in DSA in terms of looking at this as an industry to target.
So I know, well, I could say at first, I was not involved in creating this campaign. It's created by this national board that we're implementing, and that our first priority in implementing it is of course that it is very precarious and that workers' lives are on the line, especially now. But even before then, you're underpaid, you're overworked, and now you've got your life on the line with this virus. And I'd say that's the number one reason that this is where we're heading, especially because the, like you said, the turnover and the bad conditions make it easier for them to keep doing it, because a lot of the time it's easier to just get another job than try and fight, especially when it pervades the entire industry. It's like, well, why am I going to get fired when it's all the same? Why am I going to fight for, I ran into the same thing when I was trying to talk to people about organizing in mental health professional work. Was, well, I'm just going to be getting out of here. I don't know if I can get involved in this. I'm just kind of get out.
Yep.
And they use that. They use the precariousness and the miserable conditions to beat people down so that they don't stand up for themselves and so that they accept these bad conditions. And that's why it's so important to organize, because the next job is just going to be the same. It's not going to get better because they can get away with it. And that's why we're heading in this direction. I can't say that the class of like investor or the big businesses moving in factored in that much. I could definitely talk about that, but that definitely wasn't our main concern.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I just look at things, look, I'm the guy who's always known as like the dark cloud in the room, right? Because I grew up reading dystopian science fiction. So I'm always thinking about, okay, you basically take this tendency that we're in right now and you project it out about 20 years, right? And where are we,
not
right?
Right. Yeah. I do think you're right, though, that the complete failure and disinterest of our governments to prop up these businesses is going to mean that things are going to change drastically. Just between the paycheck loans that most people didn't get, and a lot of them went to really wealthy people anyway.
Right.
I think you're definitely going to see that kind of consolidation.
Well, it seems, and I'm curious, Sam, about what the kind of organizing environment has been like. I mean, you've been doing this, in the midst of a pandemic, and you're looking to move toward, my understanding is, right, that you're waiting to hear about when you're going to get an election date. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We're still waiting for that.
You have a sense, you have any sense about when you're expected to hear from that, or just kind of waiting for it?
Based on what they, based on the like information they've given us, it's probably going to be in like late August, early September.
So right around the corner, really.
Yeah, right around the corner. I guess they design it so like just to get, because like once you start the whole union process forward, the business is pretty much on like a whole like in a limbo, and right. I guess they don't want that limbo to last too long.
Right, exactly. And so what is it? I mean, I'm just curious about like some of the daily organizing stuff? I mean, what are some of the stories that you've heard from people kind of in your organizing effort, and how have you been doing this right in the midst of this, of the crisis? Because it seems to me is like the time is like for food service workers, for restaurant workers now, they're in a more precarious situation now than kind of before the pandemic. So, I mean, you need a union now more than ever. So what's this experience been like, and what are some of those conversations that you've heard?
Well, like our general like organization efforts at work have been mainly just like one-on-one conversations. Like I'll pull someone aside like after work and just be like, hey, what, like, how do you feel about that? Or like when we're smoking a cigarette, and basically just like getting a general sense of where they stand on it. Probably the most difficult part of it has been trying to unionize the back house workers, because as you said earlier, it's like we this industry very much depends on immigrants, and like there's that language barrier. And we've been like trying to like find like things on the internet to help us like translate things and translate flyers. So we've been like making a lot of flyers and just like trying to like on social media. We have a private Facebook page that like we'll invite any industry people we want to, and we keep it private just so they don't have to worry about possible repercussions. And every once in a while I'll get like a known manager or a restaurant owner try to join in. It's just like, then, which is why we keep it private. We can just like tell them to fuck off basically. And,
so bye-bye.
No. And so, yeah, it's been very just like, I don't know the like right word for it, just like word of mouth, just like very just pen and paper basically. And a lot of the conversations I have is like with something that, Danny has mentioned, is like a lot of people since this industry, like one conversation that I had that was a very, not like disheartening, but almost like infuriating conversation, was that like, you know, if you hate it so much, why don't you go back to college and like, you know,
right,
get another job? Which, like, first of all, college is super expensive, and like going to college and getting another job is not nearly as easy as it sounds. And like most undergraduate degrees require postgraduate degrees, and that's even more money. And by the time you know it, you're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt in a job market. You're not necessarily going to get a job in your field, and will eventually have to, you know, pick up serving tables again. And I think one thing that Tiffany and I are really trying to like kind of like try to help stop is the stigma of restaurant work in general. Like it's like this in-between job that you know you do it when you're like in college or out of high school. Like that can totally be a thing, like if you're in, like it's a good way to like help pay for college and stuff like that. But if you really do love the industry and want to stay in that industry, there should be like no stigma about making a career out of it, and there should be help there for you to like help you plan for a 401k and help you plan for retirement and really make a career out of it. So like a lot of the conversations we have, like as Danny said, has been like, it's been like, oh, we're just going to leave, or I'm going to get a different job. It doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter. And like, my response to that basically is fine. Like you're going to leave, you know, more power to you. You're going to get a different job in a different industry. That's great. But while you're here, why don't you like try to help the industry that has helped you thus far? And help your fellow coworkers have to go through it.
Yeah, and I think we're in a moment in history right now too, as well, where I mean, it's clear there is no one coming in on a white horse, right?
Oh, absolutely. That
the grass is not greener on the other side. The grass is actually burnt, right? And the fields are expended, right? That we're going to be eating that dirt on the other side. There's going to be no grass greener on the other side, and you know, and it's like, you know, I personally, you know, I grew up Catholic, right? And I was actually somebody who really kind of believed, right? And I believe when they're telling me that, you know, you help those that are least among you, right? When they were saying to me is like, you know, you don't turn the other cheek and walk away when someone's being abused, that becomes your responsibility, right? I remember having this little kind of like that sense of like, you know, God is watching me. So what am I going to do? I see something that's happening, that somebody's being hurt, that something bad is happening. And if I just walk away from that, that's a reflection on me. Right. And so, you know, this whole idea about love it or leave it, that somehow that we should just like, you don't like it, why don't you get out of here? That is so done. Right. That is so done. There are no other options. And this is the one thing I have to say, that, you know, I say thank God for the millennials and thank God for Gen Z. Right. I swear to God, because it's like, you know, I mean, look, we are like, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, right? So Gen X, we come up here and we're like the small dip generation in between. They're kind of like, hey, everything's going away. The factories are closing. And you're like, shut up, man. Look at this cool tech stuff over here. Right. Oh. You know, it's like, that was kind of our experience kind of growing up in the state of punk rock community and all this stuff, is that you feel like you're shouting in the wilderness. And then along comes say millennials who finally kind of get politics. Right. And then Gen Z, who's like, you know, whatever, we didn't buy into the promise to begin with, right? So there is no other place. There is no other field. The grass is not greener on other side. There is no other side. We are all in this together. And you know what? Nobody gives a fuck about us. The only people that are going to save us is ourselves. And I think that, you know, that kind of thing, I think, is resonating with it. You know, and I'm always reminded of the fact that once you start doing the points of comparison, I remember I studied in Germany one summer, right, through my graduate program or whatever, and they had – and it was at this restaurant, right? And, you know, again, this is almost cliche at this point, but I sat there to give a tip to the to the waitress who was serving me, right? And she looked at me in disgust, right? And there was like, she looked at me in disgust, and she's like, you know what? And she's like smoking a cigarette, and she sits down, and she's like, you're American, right? I'm like, yeah. Let me explain. So she sits down in the booth next to me, right? You would never imagine this happening. Can you imagine what would happen if you sat down in the booth next to a customer in a restaurant here? You'd be fired from your job for, like, you know, fraternizing with the customers. She sits down and explains to me. She's like, I'm a single mom. I have health care. My kids go to school. I have one in college. I have one who's on their way to college, right? I get paid a living wage, right? I don't need your tip. He's like, if you really want to give me the extra money, that's fine. But you need to know that I've been to the U.S. and I know what they are. I will never work there again. That's why I came back to Germany, right? And the mentality that, you know, somehow that there's these throwaway jobs, that is an ideological construct that is such a, like, something that's out of, like, the 80s and 90s. There are no other ones. You graduate, the average time that people actually get to have a job in their career if they graduate college is something like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years out of college. Right. And if you look at the age, just the, you know, the cross section of the demographics of people who are working in the restaurant industry, right? It's not college kids and high school kids that are like all zit faced and stuff like this. These are families.
No.
And so, I mean, it's like when I think about the stories of people like this, when they're saying, you know what, you know, this is really in so many ways, it's a story about saying, like, you know, instead of always looking to try to just make it by, we're going to kind of dig in and make this better and we're going to fight for it. And, you know, that's one of the things that I feel I felt so strong when I saw this campaign that you guys are doing. And I saw that the DSA is kind of connected into this and that you're doing this as a ground up thing. I mean, it's pretty impressive, as I got to say. But and diatribe.
I think you saying that that's ideological is really important, because especially if you ask that same person. Who just told, you know, I'm assuming you're talking about another employee that said that to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, if in a completely other conversation someone said, hey, man, do you think you deserve a raise? They'd say, yeah, I deserve a fucking raise. Do you see how I bust my ass around here? So it's not.
It's like, it's, oh, yeah, you know what? Idea. I notice that you're kind of lazy. You're not working hard. Like, that's a joke. I mean, if you work at a restaurant, working hard is like, you know, that's normal. Like, you know, working to exhaustion is like on a busy day.
Yeah. And, but, you know, it's the idea, it's an idea that fighting for yourself is selfish. You know, if you were, if they came in the next day and said, everyone's getting a $2 raise because you guys do a great job, that person wouldn't say, well, I don't need that. I should just go back to school if I want to raise. They would never say that.
Exactly.
It's the idea that fighting for yourself is selfish. And I think some of it also comes out of just fear, because it is scary to stand up for yourself when you work somewhere that's so precarious, because next thing you know, you're out on your ass.
Yep.
And so it's fear. But the thing is that if you organize, you have much less reason to be afraid, because you actually have some power for once in your life. So
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let me, so I'll remind everybody, if you're kind of here listening, you're listening to the live show, if you want to kind of call in, there's a little call-in button down below. We'd love to hear people's stories, voices of support, whatever it might be. If any questions for Danny or Sam, that'd be great too as well. And want to remind everybody too as well, if you want to find out more about the campaign, you go to www.717rwu.org, and you get all the information right there. You go /take-action. We'll give you a direct link about how to contact folks if you want to kind of start organizing in the Harrisburg area too as well. So let's say, how would you, well, let me put it like this. So you say you're basically looking forward to a kind of an election that is coming up towards, you know, towards the end of the summer, beginning, you know, beginning of the semester or beginning of the fall year, school year. And you've got a lot of folks that are kind of on board. You got some, say, positive reception here. Let's say, well, let's go either way. It doesn't matter. Like almost regardless of whether or not that you kind of win this particular election, right? Let's assume you do, right? You win this election. What comes next for 717 Restaurant Workers United? What's the vision?
Well, the vision there is, like, first of all, we're going to have to, like, start, that's when our negotiation starts with management and ownership of a contract. I've been in contact with a lawyer who is going to help us out with that. And beyond that is I just really want to almost, like, make like I want everyone to see the process. I like everyone like in that Facebook group, everyone in the restaurant industry around here, I really want to show them that there's going to be someone there, you know, to bat for them, and that someone there's someone here now to fight for them. And all you got to do is, you know, contact us. You got to do some work on your end of like getting together restaurant workers. I just want the, like, I want Cork and Fork to be like a pillar to like success, I guess, like a tangible example of that it can work. It's not like just a pipe dream, and it can, and it's, you know, it can come to a restaurant near you. That's basically what we're going to be focusing on next after that, after the election.
That'd be absolutely fantastic. So one thing I was curious about, that I'm going to go back into, like, how you actually went through and did some of the organizing. One of the things that you mentioned in your press release too was that, this kind of took off after you got some real strong social media push, and that you had kind of like all this engagement through a Reddit post. Can you walk us through a little bit of some of that? Like, how did that social media push look like? What did those conversations on Reddit look like? And how do you see that as kind of, or how did this become this national thing? You say this kind of actually got it some national, kind of attention kind of through Reddit and through the social media channels.
Well, yeah. So like on, I can't remember the exact date, but it was the Thursday that we were like going public. We sent like an email to management, and we made the Facebook group. Tiffany and I made Facebook posts basically just saying what we're doing. Like, we were just like, I was writing some press releases, and Tiffany was just like on a whim was like, I know I'm going to make a Reddit post about it. And it just like, she spent literally the rest of the day just responding to comments and, like, I don't know, I don't really go on Reddit, but like DMs, I guess, from Redditors. And like, there's like people from like all over the country that were like, we need this to happen. And I think it really shows that there is like a desire there to like make things better. And like, it was overwhelmingly like positive. There were like a couple, you know, negative Nancys who were just like, oh, this won't work and stuff like that. But like we had people emailing our general manager from all over, like people from Colorado were sending her emails saying like, hey, this is important, treat your workers right. That's awesome. it was incredible. I couldn't believe that happened. But it's just like, I just think it shows that like there is that need in restaurant industries right now, and like sometimes people just need to be shown, like, you know, the shadows on the wall kind of deal. Like, you just need to be shown that you deserve to be treated better, and you do not deserve, like, basically the entire industry for decades, probably, you know, way before I was in it, has been this, although all the employees are basically gaslighted into thinking that they don't deserve more, that they are expendable, that they're, especially like, I was just like, that they're not important almost. And it's, I feel like it's time to end that gaslighting, just because as if you work, like, you know, like to quote Bernie Sanders, if you work 40 hours a week, you shouldn't have to worry about having enough money or having health care or having like some place to live. Like, I just like think it comes to a time where restaurant workers need like help in surviving, especially with the way the world's going. 223 or whatever it is, 283 an hour is ridiculous.
It's disgusting. It really is disgusting.
I just can't believe just saying that number out loud is insane.
It's like, you know, and the fact that you've got actually, you know, this is where is like, you know, there's been legislation has been proposed kind of in the state in order to try to increase the wages. I know Summer Lee has been kind of behind us. A lot of the kind of the new progressives that are kind of getting elected at statewide politics are trying to get on this board, trying to actually make sure that there's a the minimum wage for tipped workers, as we call them, like as if like somehow that's some special class that if you could possibly get tips from somebody, then you should be somehow demoted to like slave wages. I mean, that's, I've never understood that to begin with. It makes absolutely no sense. I mean, it shows you how we value labor and how we value workers in this country. But that's a side conversation. But, you know, the legislation goes nowhere. And then you've got Republicans in the House, Republicans in the state Senate, who just basically look and say, oh, my God, we can't do this. We can't do this. We can't do this. And so, you know, it becomes the point where this is where unions become absolutely essential. Right. I mean, if you're not.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, you know, breaking through the barrier of fear, right, that first conversation, I can remember back when I was first kind of doing some organizing work. I was working with, we were working with home care workers, and SCIU, this is up in Syracuse, Local 200B. One of the things was crazy. We first had to talk to workers, and one of the things that so many of the workers talked about in the first organizing thing. I remember sitting at this big round table. I was being brought into the discussion by this guy, Larry Elkoff, who was kind of one of the head organizers. And he said, I just want you to sit through some of these things and listen to how people talk about this stuff. And they said one of the things that they were most afraid of doing is actually talking to their coworkers about unionization, because they were worried about that, you know, somehow that it's going to become very, very uncomfortable for them. And then on the flip side of it, the people were saying, like, I feel like I'm being treated like crap, but I don't feel like I should say too much about it because then I'm going to be someone who's going to be on the outside. But once they broke that barrier and started telling their stories, I'm going to say, you know what? We're on the same page here. You find out that you have more people that are on the same page that just need to find a community and a point of connection. And yeah, you're going to get your trolls, right? Trolls are everywhere. They will always exist, right? Whether it's in your workplace or whether it's online, those trolls will be there. But once you kind of break that barrier of fear, you actually have conversations about making things better. Suddenly you find that's your only opportunity to build community, build solidarity, and do the kind of organizing work that you guys are doing. So kudos.
Cool. Oh, and like, yeah, it's like it was really amazing to me how many people ended up like being in support. Like, I don't like obviously want to say like precise numbers.
Sure.
Like I kind of like to keep keep the arsenal full, but we do have like a majority. Like, I'm very optimistic that the vote will go through. And I know it's like hilarious to me is that all throughout this process, management has not taken us seriously. Like, we had like an initial meeting before we went like live, like with any workers who wanted to show up on City Island. And the one manager like found out about it, and she was like, oh, the servers are just having a meeting. And first of all, it kind of annoyed me because it's not just the servers. We want to like represent everyone in the restaurant industry. And second of all, it was just like, okay, you're not going to take it seriously. You're going to probably end up regretting that. And then the emails started happening and the takeout takeover happened. And I think one thing I want to also make very clear about the takeout takeover, it was that like we showed that we are capable with the help of the DSA to organize our community and like basically save the day for them. Like, when it comes to like financially speaking, you know, over like $2,000 in sales made it worthwhile for them to keep the doors open. And so it kind of shows A, that we have organizing power, and B, that we do want the company to succeed so we can get paid and succeed, but we're just not willing to do it at the risk of our exploitation.
Well, that's a really I'm glad you brought it back to this, because this is one of the questions I meant to ask you early on. And it's like, I thought that was so interesting, because it says that as a tactic right? Because it's kind of basically saying you could have more of this and succeed. Or, you know, I don't know. Or maybe not have this. Because the same organizing that brings you this revenue is the kind of, same kind of organizing that could, you know, go the other way. So what's it going to be? You know, it's kind of like the, you know, the which side of this are you going to be on kind of discussion.
Side of good or side of bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, we're all in this together. Okay, let's see. Money, you know, let's put the money on the table for this one, huh? So, Danny, so take us through then. So where do you see, I mean, kind of your role now as part of, say, Harrisburg DSA's kind of role and kind of helping support this campaign kind of and to help bring it to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, so part of our role is we are lucky to have locally and nationally a lot of people with a lot of experience who are here for advice. Both for this campaign and any other campaign that comes up. And then other than that, it's sort of the same thing with the takeout takeover. I mean, ideally you wouldn't see a union as a political thing. You know, it's been made a political thing, but it truly is that workers deserve an equal seat at the table. They deserve to be on that same footing with the people they make money for. You know, you couldn't have a restaurant without workers. So you don't have to share our politics. We don't ask you to. But for us to have support, to get this community support, and do that same kind of thing, you know, our organization has been able to do in other chapters. You know, we can help exert public pressure. We can help get people out to events. You know, we can't do much on the shop floor because most of us don't work there,
right? But
really any of the community side of things, we can provide, you know, some nice backup.
Well, fantastic. Well, let me say, just one reminder, we've got about 5 minutes left in our show. So if anybody does want to call in, kind of, ask a question, have a comment, words of support, please do. You got the little button down there at the kind of bottom of your app and just kind of click it in and call in. Otherwise, so if there's folks out here that are listening to, because I'll remind everybody that not only do we have this live show, but this, this show is recording of the show goes directly into our podcast. So that'll kind of go out to all of our podcast listeners, to Out the Coop. So if anybody's listening to this podcast, anybody's listening to this live show, they want to know how they can help out, on what should they look out on, what should they do, Sam?
They should find out how, like, if they want to help us out. We're forming this campaign right now where we're gonna, like, if you go to the whole take-action link, there's a, if you scroll to the bottom of the page, there's a join our street team deal. And what we're doing is we're making business cards that if you, like, go out to eat, you can just, like, leave the business card on the table and just, like, with your at least 20% tip, and just like to let people know that, like, there is someone out there to, like, that can support you. And also, if, like, we have a contact us if you are interested about helping or, like, getting, like, organizing your restaurant, and we'll, like, help you through those steps like any union would, just, like, help you, like, get the right paperwork and send stuff to the National Labor Relations Board, and we'll help you all through that process as well.
Fantastic. And I would urge all of my union brothers and sisters out there to actually get on that. Get right down there. Again, you can go to www.717rwu.org/take-action. And if you click on that link, just exactly what Sam says, you can go right down. You can join that street team. Really simple thing that you can do. Just kind of your name, kind of email, little your subject, your message, put it in there. So you want to be a part of that street team. And, you know, let them know that you heard this about this on Raging Chicken. Let them know about that you're kind of a union member too as well. But you don't have to be a union member. Everybody can join this right now. And then likewise, Danny, so if people are looking around for kind of like-minded souls, so to speak, kind of in the Harrisburg area, what's going on with Harrisburg DSA, and how could somebody kind of get in touch with you guys?
Sure. So our main things we're working on right now, we're working on this, We are also in the process of forming, well, we have formed, we're in the process of building the Greater Harrisburg's Tenants United.
Nice.
So we're building a tenant union in the area. So if you are a renter and you want to help organize with other people under your landlord against bad conditions, you can reach out to us the best way. And we are also, you can also reach out to us for organizing tips as well for labor-related things. But the best way to get to us, you can get to us on our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/HBGDSA. That's HBGDSA. Those are our main two projects right now, things that we can do remotely pretty well. We are also involved in a coalition you should check out on Facebook, the Harrisburg Abolition Table, about reimagining public safety past policing. If you want to get involved with that, you can message us as well. And also, in about 2 weeks' time, we are holding a Zoom workers' forum, a hospitality workers' forum, 2 weeks from now. So that's going to be... we're doing two nights in case someone can't get off work or however shifts work. So we're doing the 9th and the 10th. Over Zoom, a hospitality workers forum to hear from people in the industry to talk about how these past couple months have been and what our next step should be. We're going to publish that in a day or two, but you can find it on our Facebook at facebook.com/HBGDSA.
Fantastic. And, make sure you guys shoot me out any kind of press release stuff you have on that stuff. I'd love to talk to somebody else further about the those organizing efforts, too, out there in Harrisburg. It's freaking awesome.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, hey, I want to thank both of you. I want to thank you, Sam. I want to thank you, Danny, for kind of joining us today. I'm going to this Out the Coop Live. And Sam, I wish you all the best. And I want you to, I'll be probably harping on you too as well. But as things develop, I hope that you'll kind of kick some stuff back our way. I'd love to have you or Tiffany, because I know Tiffany's now a little under the weather. So hopefully she'll be able to come back kind of full on strong. And then we'll have her back on, kind of talk a little about things as the whole organizing effort kind of continues.
Awesome. We'll for sure do that. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you got
thanks
it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And everybody who's listening to this, whether you're listening to the podcast, you're listening to live, want to make sure that once this is posted up, this will be in our regular podcast feed. Push this out, let everybody know about it, and push everybody right to that take action link. This will be in the full podcast description. You'll go there, join the street team of 717 Restaurant Workers United. Make sure you get in touch with the folks at Harrisburg DSA. Again, links for that will be in our podcast link. We'll also remind you that we will be on here on Friday too as well. Sean Kitchen has a birthday on Friday. It's hit or miss whether Sean's actually going to show up to the podcast. We shall see. His birthday is on Friday. He's going to be, 47 or something like that? No, not quite, but he's up there. I know he's in the middle of moving. He just spent a week doing God knows what in his hometown of Horsham. But now he's back up in Harrisburg, and so hopefully he'll be on the show. So tune in live. We're going to be doing also on our regular Friday show. We're going to be shooting for about 10:30 each Friday, and because we're also going to be start streaming that live, because like we got the kink streak out of our YouTube feed for our Friday show. This one is also going to be what we're talking about right now will also be on our YouTube page, so you can check us out there. Make sure that you like us, make sure that you comment on it, make sure that you share share it out there, and that's what you can do to help us. And if you want to help support this work, Raging Chicken, whether it's our podcast, with our written work, whatever it might be, you can go to patreon.com/rcpress. That's patreon.com/rcpress. So you become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. So all you craft beer folks out there, or go out there and kind of have the latest kind of like triple IPA where Simcoe hops, you spend that at least that once a month at one of those beers. Kick us that, become a member of Raging Chicken for as little $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron today. So once again, thank you, Sam. Thank you, Danny, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You got it, guys. You got it, guys. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate you. We'll be back next week. Next week on Out the Coop Live, we're going to be turning to higher ed organizing. And we're going to be looking at student organizing, faculty organizing, organizing, worker organizing from a bunch of different locations across the state of Pennsylvania. So we'll hope to hear you, see you, talk to you then. It's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're out of here. See you guys.
See you.
Have a good one.